changes all over the place, and you can sort of trace that on a Smith chart. And if you're a real smart guy, you're going to put a loading coil on the bottom. In the case of a 5/8 wave ground plane antenna, there's always a loading coil on the bottom. The loading coil is taking the 5/8 wave mechanical radiator and electronically bringing it up to 3/4 wave where it's resonant again, electronically. Radiation doesn't happen very easily. We all want to believe we send our RF energy into the antenna. The RF energy goes down the antenna one time and jumps out into space. Nothing could be further from the truth. Radiating is difficult. You have to take those electrons you put on that antenna of yours, and you've got to kick them in the tail 30 times in a row before they finally go out into space. Our dipoles, we call a half-wave dipole resonant, because the energy is bouncing back and forth something like 30 times on a dipole, and the right length means that all those bounces stay co-phase. Therefore, the antenna looks like a resistor. If you make the antenna a little bit too long, then the bouncing becomes lagging in phase, and we think the antenna is inductive. Make the half-wave dipole a little bit too short, the 30 bounces start leading in phase, and we think it's capacitive. Resonance really means you're keeping all the bounces in phase. Radiation doesn't happen easily. So every one of our antennas, we're going to electronically resonate them before they radiate. Remember that statement. You resonate first, then you radiate. The only exception to that is antennas that are a zillion wavelengths long, rhombic beverage. But other than that, any of the finite-sized antennas that we all use, you must resonate the antenna system. Now, the system you're resonating is the thing you call antenna, the impedance-matching box that might be in the bottom of the antenna, and the coax cable going back to the transmitter, and in the case of a PI output network, loading and resonating controls of the PI network. That whole system you're going to resonate, or
long wind. Repeater, time out, 0 seconds.
I'll repeat that. That whole radiating system, transmitting, transmission line, radiating antenna system, you're going to resonate it, or it will not radiate. With a little bit of correction on what I mean by that. I mean, yes, I can have a thoroughly non-resonant antenna, and it will radiate 20 dB weaker signal than a resonant one was. From all practical purposes, I'm calling that a non-radiator. Let's face it, once you make an RF signal, it radiates, even if it's just a leakage out of the box that you've got it inside of. There's always a little bit of radiation. But real radiation, where the guy is going to give you a reasonable signal strength report, requires resonance. So those radials, you make them resonant so they act like a short. The radiator itself, you're going to put some kind of an impedance matching device on the bottom of it if you didn't make it an odd number of quarter wavelengths long in order to bring it into resonance. Maybe that helps a little bit, Steve. KC2MDP, K2LIW on the TechNet.
Yes, very good. Forgot to wait for it to drop. Yes, that makes sense. And I remember you saying something that one time, if you could just go over it real quick. You know, some of the ground radials, you know, they're basically at a right angle to the vertical, and then others slant, and I forget exactly what you said why that was. If you could just go over that again real quick, Dick, back to you.
Yes, I could. If I had the great big sheet of metal, which is the mirror image of the other half of a dipole on a quarter wave resonator, let's face it, a real half-wave dipole in space is very close to 72 ohms resistive when it is resonated. Since I'm only putting up half the dipole, obviously a big sheet of metal and a quarter-wave radiator will be 35 ohms, half of 70. So the base loading impedance of a quarter-wave ground plane antenna with an ideal counterpoise will be 35 ohms. If you could take that sheet of metal and start bending it down so it's a very wide cone instead of a flat sheet of metal, you'll see the impedance starts going higher again. As you make that cone go more and more drastic, eventually it squeezes itself all the way down and becomes the other half of the dipole, if you know what I mean, and you're up to 72 ohms. But before you get there, before you squeeze it all the way down, at some particular cone angle of your counterpoise, you will see a base loading impedance of 50 ohms. So when you take those quarter wave ground plane radials and you tilt them down, you're taking what would have been 35 ohms and raising it. If you could actually see the E-field lines that flow between the quarter wave resonator and the ground plane, let me drop. You're making those lines a little bit longer when you tilt them down, and that's another way of looking at why the impedance goes up. So those ground plane radials, as you tilt them down, you do a little bit better job of making your 35 ohm antenna into a 50 ohm antenna. Does that make a little more sense to you? Go ahead.
Yes, it definitely does. As soon as you explained it, I remember the whole thing. So, is that how they get away with making them shorter? Is the angle? Well, let's say, you know, for the sake of argument, I had a quarter wave, and I made my ground radials, you know, at a 90 degree angle, and they were too short. They were too short. Now, that would lower my impedance, or would that make it too high? Now, in other words, you know, let's say it was at that 35 ohms, let's say, for sake of argument I had, and I bent them down, I could actually bend them rather than lengthening them to get my 50 ohms. Is that correct? Back to you.
Negative. For the ground plane radials to do the job, electronically, you're going to make them a quarter wavelength long. Physically, they're going to be 95% of a quarter wavelength long. Why 95 and not 100%? You always a little bit of end loading capacitance at reasonable diameters of wires that you use for the ground plane radials. For the ground plane radials to do their job correctly, they will be electronically a quarter wavelength long, period. It doesn't matter if the radiator, the thing in the center, is too short, too long, multiple wavelengths, collinear, whatever. The ground plane radials are going to stay a quarter wavelength long if you want them to do their job correctly. Now, when you tilt them down from being completely parallel, completely perpendicular to the radiator, the impedance of the radiator goes up a little bit. You didn't change their electrical length. They're still quarter wavelength long. Mechanically, they're still 95% of a quarter wavelength long. When you bend them down, for the most part, you do not change their length. The ground plane radials work best quarter wave long. Keep them there. Don't change them. Make the ground plane radials too long or too short. Instead of them reflecting a short circuit at the base of the antenna, they're going to reflect an inductive reactance or a capacitor reactance. They're not going to do as good a job, and you will have current flowing down the outside of your coax cable. Keep them quarter wavelength long, Steve. Back to you. Wait for the beep.
Okay, very good. I understand now. The reason I only bring up all this mess is, you know, when I first got into this hobby, I built myself a half-wave ground plane antenna, and I'm pretty sure I kept the radials quarter-wave length long, and the SWR on this thing was way off, so what I ended up doing is actually taking wire and making loading coils and, like, putting it in a little box and, you know, like, actually physically making those three radials longer with, like, these, you know, like, basically a loading coil, a wire coil. And I was just trying to figure out, you know, why I had to do that. Back to you.
W2VL repeater.
Okay, glad you did bring that up, Steve. If I had a poor impedance match at the base of my vertical ground plane antenna, you do have another knob in your hand, so to speak. You can adjust the length of the ground plane radials to make the apparent impedance and the apparent visor get better. You can do that. I am recommending you do not use that knob. Although you make the impedance look better and the visor look better, the radiation characteristics may degrade. You're now going to have current flowing down the outside of the coax cable. Your antenna is not the only thing that's doing the radiating now. Your coax cable is doing the radiating. Because it is not as carefully positioned as the antenna itself, it's going to radiate, in general, a crazy polarity, a crazy pattern in directions you may not like, if that coax cable happens to pass by the apartment of your neighbor and their television set, and now you've got out of energy on the outside of that cable, you could easily have increased television interference because your cable is doing the radiating and not the antenna that would have been 50 feet away from this apartment, if you know what I mean. So you can, if you want to, use the ground plane radios as an impedance matching device. I'm recommending you don't do it. It's got more problems than benefits. Back to you, Steve.
WB2HWW.
Howie recognized Steve first. Go ahead, Steve.
Very good, Dick. I'm glad you explained this all to me. Now I have some sort of basis, because it's one of the things I enjoy doing is building and messing with antennas. Yep, I'll just have to go out there with the out into the garage, get my aluminum tubing out, and start playing around again. And I'll keep that in mind. I'll keep the ground radials quarter wavelength or even a little bit shorter. Thanks again, Dick. I greatly appreciate the explanation. Back to you.
Yeah, let me amplify that a little bit before I pass it over to Howie. And that is, standing wave ratio and gain are thoroughly disconnected, unrelated. Gain is defined as that property you measure after you impedance match the antenna. And an antenna with a perfect standing wave ratio, common sense would tell you, boy, that must be 100% radiator. All the energy is going down that cable one time, it goes to the antenna, doesn't come back to me, that's hunky-dory. You would think a low standing wave ratio is a good antenna. In many cases, nothing is further from the truth. I can put a perfect 50-ohm dummy load on the far end of that cable. You didn't know it. In the shack, you measure a great visuar, and you think you've got a great antenna. There are lots of antennas that can give you a good visuar. I can set up a vertical ground plane antenna in the backyard with no radials at all. Just a couple of feet of spike in the ground, acting like a counterpoise. That's a highly resistive counterpoise, very lossy. If I adjust everything correctly, I can have an antenna with great standing wave ratio. But because it doesn't have the real ground plane radials, a high percentage of my RF energy is using the dirt of my backyard as a dummy load, heating it up, keeping the worms happy and warm in the wintertime, but not radiating that signal in space. So don't be confused into thinking that a low visual antenna is a good antenna with a high gain and efficient radiation. VISWAR is a necessary but not sufficient. It tells you something about the impedance matching. It doesn't tell you how much of the rest of the antenna is working well. So go a little bit slow on that one. Go ahead, Howie. KQRIW with TechNet. Wait for the beep.
Yes. Well, a comment and a question, Dick, on this whole subject. First thing, if you use the ground radio as part of your battery network, but you have a down or a choke, will you make sure that you wrap the coaxial cable and made a 4 meters down? Would you be able to get away with that?
If you do it right, I think the answer is yes, Howie. If below the ground plane radio, I've got an ideal balancing device that will not allow current to flow down the outside of the cable, then yes, in that circumstance, I'm going to agree with you. You can legally, so to speak, use the tuning of the ground plane radials as an impedance matching device on the antenna with the proper balancing device below the ground plane radials. If the balancing device is above the ground plane radials, the answer is probably no, because you are launching current into those ground plane radials. Whether or not they represent a short circuit is a function of whether or not they're a quarter wavelength long electronically. And if they're not a short circuit, you are launching current into the outside of your coax cable. So you brought up a good case. So not quite as severe as I said. With a real good balancing device below the ground plane radials, yes, you can use the ground plane radials as a tuning device. Back to you on that one, Howie.
Yeah, because I've done it, and it does work. If you use a choke or a bounce. Now, my next question is on the same subject area. I just want to ask a question here about an antenna, and I want to get your comment on this, Dick. It's basically on the same line as making a vertical antenna.
Fire away. Wait for the beep. Fire away.
All right, Dick. Say you took a pole, let's say 24-foot long. You mounted it to, let's say, another 24-foot pole. You took a 24-foot pole, you mounted it on top of, let's say, of a 25 or a 30-foot pole, you insulated it, and at that junction, you put a transmatch, or the automatic matching network. You fed that with coaxial cable. Would you be able to, do you think that would be a decent all-band antenna instead of using like an RA? You took one of these automatic antenna tuners, and you mounted the antenna tuner in the middle. You made a dipole. Basically, you have a 24-foot pole standing on top of a mounting pole, and it was insulated. And at that junction, you put a matching network, an automatic matching, you know, tuner. You think that would work?
I'm waiting for the machine to reset. Okay. One of the nicest antennas in the world would be a purely vertical half-wave dipole mounted a number of wavelengths above the ground. It would have a very low angle of radiation, and if you got the right kind of impedance matching device on that system and feed line coming off at right angles from it, you could make that antenna work over a tremendous frequency region. And except for the fact that the antenna itself would be multiple wavelengths long and occasionally you're going to have some peaks and valleys and nulls in certain directions, except for that phenomenon, that antenna could be an extremely efficient radiator over a tremendous frequency region. A pure vertical dipole fed with ideal coax cable or twin lead off to one side, a good impedance matching device, and the antenna is multiple wavelengths off the ground. That's a thoroughly balanced radiating system. You've done the impedance matching. All the RF energy you put into it is going to be radiated to space. Very little bit of it's going to be coupled into the nearby Earth. So you've got a near 100% radiation system across 80 through 10 meters easily and maybe even beyond. Now, as I start degrading that and go a little bit closer to what you're talking about, Howie, the bottom half of that dipole, let me drop. Dipole is grounded at the bottom. It's not being allowed to operate as a dipole. And as such, it's now going to be a different kind of... It's a different kind of a radiating system. It's no longer balanced. You're now pouring current into Mother Earth, and unless you do it with a great big radial ground plane system, that current you pour into Earth is primarily a dummy load, and a lot of it's going to be lost. So, you are very close to an extremely good antenna system, but unless you've got some kind of choking mechanism at the bottom where that pipe reaches ground, so you don't launch current into the ground, and really ideally that the choking system should be some number of wavelengths above the ground, even having the tip of a pure vertical dipole come close to ground is still going to be launching currents into the ground, and it'd be wasteful. So, if you make that pipe tall enough, seed it at a slot that you've cut somewhere in the middle of it, and have a choking device at the bottom so that there is the equivalent of a quarter wave above, a quarter wave below the feeding point, that could be an extremely efficient, very broadband system. That's a possible design if you get some of the bugs out of it, Allie. Go ahead.
Yeah, the reason why I'm bringing that up, Dick, is you look at like an R8, you're familiar with an R8, and I'm saying, why do I got to spend all that money when I can take an automatic antenna tuner and take a couple of pieces of pipe? Now, the R8 is basically a halfway vertical resonance. So, you have any ideas for an all-band antenna that you could use as a vertical, that you could use an automatic antenna tuner?
Lots of guys have set up what looks like a ground plane, vertical ground plane antenna, on the balcony of their apartment. And they're using as a counterpoise the metal railing. And if the radiator is a half wave long, because a half wave radiator has an input impedance very different than quarter wave. Quarter wave, the input impedance is in the vicinity of 35 ohms. Half wave resonator, the impedance is multiple thousands of ohms, maybe 3,000-4,000 ohms. Therefore, you're launching very little current into the railing of their balcony, of their apartment. Lots of guys have set up what looks like a vertical ground plane antenna, but it's a half-wave radiator. They've done it by spiral wrapping and loading, inductive loading coils and whatever. They've gotten some very efficient antennas out of that. So once you go to half-wave radiators, you can now back off a whole lot on the quality of the ground plane radio system and get pretty good performance. You still have the slight catch, though, and that is even with a mediocre set of ground plane radials, you may get great standing wave ratio, and with a half-wave radiator, you think everything's hunky-dory. Still, the darn thing is so close to the ground that not very many feet of
long wind.
And that because a few feet away you've got earth that is not being protected by radials, you're launching some current into that earth. So except for the little bit of loss you're going to get due to the fact that the ground plane, that the whole radiating system is very close to earth, other than that, half-wave radiators in general work a heck of a lot better than quarter-wave radiators. That's what's really going on when you make a mag mount on your car, 5/8 wave. It's much closer to half-wave. It launches very little current into the sheet metal at the top of the car. It gives you not only a higher center of radiation, which gives you a little bit more range, but it's got a slightly better pattern, and that's where the extra gain is coming from. So half-wave radiators are much to be preferred over quarter wave if you've got the real estate to do it. Back to you, Howie.
Comment, Dick.
Yeah, stand by there, Howie. Go ahead, Bill.
Wait for the reset. Okay, there you are. Well, this is not a new concept, Dick. It's been around a long time, for many years, these elevated feed verticals. And that's what GAP is, a company called GAP Antennas, that is, you know, marketing a antenna that's been the idea. They just picked up on the idea. But instead of mounting a tuning-type device like Howie was talking about up there at the so-called split, the insulated point, they put a bunch of tuning rods up there and a matching network inside the pipe. They call it an elevated feed, but it's basically something that's been around for quite a number of years. I've seen a number of that type of design, but basically that's what he's alluding to, Dick, over.
Yep, and that's a good way to go. So, to some degree, you get more for your money out of vertical antennas than horizontal when they're close to the ground. And if you can take a vertical antenna and raise it above the ground, you get even more benefit yet. Once you get up to some real high altitude, should you run horizontal or vertical, that's not an easy one to decide which one's better. But half-wave has got a lot going for it, and they really can do vertically polarized half-wave radiators. Not very many people have got the real estate and the tower to do it with, though. Now, when it comes to Smith charts, let's assume now that a lot of people have collected their Smith chart, Mel, and you're about to tell them how that Smith chart is going to give them all these answers that are going to make them rich, and all these pretty-looking ladies are going to be coming to their doorstep. And tell me how you do all that, Mel. K2KEY, K2IW of the TechNet.
Well, basically, this is K2KEY. I've had a lot of questions, basically just what we just talked about. Similar problems and ideas with verticals, and a number of them have come up with, you know, problems that the handheld antenna analyzers are very ambiguous. And like you say, they'll look at it, says, oh, look at the SWR, it's terrific. But why the heck does my friend have an antenna that seems to be a cheaper antenna, simpler antenna, basically maybe reading the same SWR or a higher SWR, and his antenna is working better? So is more to it. Again, that's basically what I went over, Dick, exactly what you've been saying for about the last hour, that there's a lot more to it, that if I guess I slipped the dummy load on the end of that wire and said, how do you like this antenna, all the frequencies, whatever you want to look at, it loads beautiful. Look at the SWR. It's fantastic, but gee, it doesn't get out very well. So I've gone through this over and over again, but I basically, when I mentioned about using the Smith chart to clarify a number of things, it seems like it comes up as I'm just...
You're absolutely right, Mel. You have to separate in your mind standing wave ratio from antenna performance and gain. I will admit that an antenna with a 10-to-1 standing wave ratio on most of the transmitters we own these days is going to give you a fairly poor performing system. The transmitter itself, usually solid state final nowadays, but tuning in the final, will cut itself back to a low power output when it sees a 10-to-1 standing wave ratio. Either it turns itself off entirely or cuts itself back to a very low power. But if you did have a good impedance matching device on the antenna and reasonably low and a low insertion loss transmission line, a 10-to-1 standing wave ratio antenna could radiate beautifully. And the 1-to-1 standing wave ratio antenna could radiate very poorly. So standing wave ratio tells you something about your system. You got to be careful how you use the information. Just because the VisWire is low doesn't mean the antenna is great. And just because the VisWire is high doesn't mean the antenna is terrible. The inverted V dipole I used to use on 20 meters used to have something like a 10-to-1 standing wave ratio. And when I would talk to somebody in South America with it, he would give me a good signal report. I was using a transmitter that had a real PI output network, a real tuning and loading control, and I could accommodate that high standing wave ratio. And of the 100 watts I was generating, about 90 watts was being radiated. So there's more to it than meets the eye. The Smith chart is going to help you see something about how the impedance of your antenna appears to change. Let me drop. How the antenna appears to change in its impedance just because you've changed the length of the cable. That's what the Smith chart is telling you. You add and subtract cable, you're going to rotate yourself on that constant radius circle on the Smith chart. You're going to come up with an entirely new impedance. That's not bad, just that the length of the cable keeps changing the impedance, and the Smith chart shows you all the possible impedances, and it shows you every time you add another half wavelength of cable, you'll make one complete circle on that Smith chart and come right back to the same point again. And if you want your antenna, which is now inductive, to look capacitive, add roughly a quarter wavelength of cable, and that will happen, and the Smith chart will tell you that. So that's a really crazy characteristic. How in the world can I put the right dummy load on the far end of the cable, a good 50-ohm load, and whether the cable is long or short, nothing happens. DC to light, it looks like a 50-ohm resistor going into that cable. Make anything but a 50-ohm load at the far end of the cable, and now the length of the cable is one of the factors that determines what impedance you see. At first, that doesn't make sense. But once you recognize the fact that the transmission line does a beautiful job, if it's got the right impedance, the signal will flow down there once, get absorbed by that impedance, and never come back. Put any other impedance there, or even use the smallest amount of reactance with that impedance. If you've got any reactance at all on the far end of the cable, some amount of your signal is going to reflect back. When that signal reflects back into the shack, your transmitter, your standing wave ratio meter, your antenna analyzer, all of those things will think they're seeing a different impedance. They really are.
measuring what current flows due to the signal you put into the cable. They're also measuring what current that flows because of the signal that's reflecting back from the antenna. The two combine into a brand new current at some crazy phase angle, and we call that another impedance. It's really made up of multiple components, but in the most case, you're not separating those components. You just see it as a different impedance. You see it as a 25 ohm input, or 100 ohm input, or a capacitive input, or an inductive input. And anything but 50 ohms usually is not desirable, if you can avoid it. So, back to you, and tell us some more, Mel. K2KEY, about to give us some basic information. K2RIW, check that.
West Index, WS2N.
And by the way, Paul, when it gets back to you, I've got this beautiful report that you're going to tell us about on October 31st at 10 o'clock in the morning. Mr. Griffith is going to make this great decision about whether or not he does or does not support a repair mission to the Hubble Space Telescope. So, Halloween Day, we've got a big decision coming up. But go ahead with your question, Paul.
Okay, I've heard this a number of times as far as the antenna attached to a railing on the building or antennas mounted on air conditioners outside the house. I often thought the railing system can be grounded or cannot be grounded. I would think most railing systems somehow are tend to be grounded through the air, whatever, if they're bolted into the concrete. Chances are they're probably hitting a rebar inside the concrete, and they're probably grounded. And same for air conditioners in a window, might be caught up against the frame, and the frame of that window could be grounded. Doesn't matter one way or the other. I know it all works, but it seems to matter one way or the other whether or not this railing, for instance, is grounded in these apartment buildings, which is the hangar antenna off. Use the counterpoise of the railing as your counterpoise.
So if I understand you correctly, Paul, the basic question you're asking is, does that grounding count? In most cases, I believe the railing of your balcony, of your apartment building, is going to be grounded by the rest of the building, connected to the rest of the building for lightning protection reasons, for human safety. You never want to have any of your guests visiting your apartment going out to the balcony, touching that railing, and have the railing hot with 110 volts because somebody did some kind of miswiring of the building. In general, those railings are probably grounded to the rest of the steel of the building. And the same thing when it comes to air conditioners. By way of the neutral wire, they're grounded. Well, the word grounding when it comes to RF is a slightly relative word. And you've heard that joke I've used so often of what was done with the antenna department of the company I used to work at. Somebody started off with a great big flower pot filled with dirt, and a piece of 6-gauge wire comes out of the flower pot, and there's a sign across the flower pot that says, good earth ground, and you're supposed to connect it to the antennas that are being tested. Well, that's not a good ground, obviously. It's a joke. And so when it comes to RF, you can decide that you've got an extremely good ground when it comes to LOCO and Con Ed. In other words, you make measurements on your railing of your balcony, and you find out that it truly has zero or only a couple of millivolts with reference to Earth at any one instant of time. But if you're on the 18th floor of an apartment building and you're, 180 feet in the air, obviously at 20 megacycles or 50 megacycles, you're a large number of wavelengths above Earth. There's a lot of wavelengths of building between you and Earth, and so the ground there is kind of a relative ground. A good ground when it comes to human safety and lightning protection, but it may not be an ideal ground when it comes to 20 meters, let's say. Back to you, Paul. Wait for the beep.
Okay, so let me get this right. So you take a half wave, instead of a half-wave dipole, you've got the quarter wave of that. You're going to use the railing as the other half of this quarter wave ground plane system. Is that what you're saying? Or are you saying you're going to take this half-wave vertical and just attach it to the physically attach it, but not electrically attach it to the railing, and have the same effect as, for instance, 5/8 wave that's not mounted on a car. Electrically, it's really not attached to the car because of the capacitance is really giving the 5/8 wave a counterpoise. So it's the same effect for, let's say, a mobile on a car compared to an antenna on the railing. You know what I'm getting at. In other words, you used an example before of a half-way dipole, vertically polar, quarter on each side, free space. Now bring that down. You're attached to the center coax. Now bring that whole antenna down until the point of the bottom of the dipole hits the ground. What would happen to your penis? What would happen to your patent? Would everything stay the same? Drastically change? That's what it sounds like to me. It sounds like, it's kind of confusing between the two. Two or three different types. That's it.
W2VL repeat.
I see what you're asking, Paul. In general, I'm recommending that you consider the railing of your apartment as a grounding device, an RF grounded device. It's close to that, but there's really some length to that railing. And the best kind of an antenna to connect to the balcony of your apartment will be a half-wave radiator. Because the base impedance of a half-wave radiator is something in the thousands of ohms, therefore very little current is launched into your railing of your balcony. It will require an impedance matching device because you are feeding an antenna of a 2,000 ohms impedance when it's a half-wave radiator. But once you get over that hurdle of the impedance matching of a couple thousand ohms, you're launching very little current into the railing. The railing, in that circumstance, looks like a very good RF ground. You'll get efficient radiation, you'll get a nice pattern, which is determined by the orientation of your half-wave radiator. If by comparison you made that radiator a quarter wavelength long, and you now use as the counterpoise your railing, you're launching a substantial amount of current into the railing. The railing itself is not a good RF ground, even though it may be a good Con Ed ground. As such, the railing with its crazy layout is going to give you some other impedance that you can accommodate, but it's going to give you some other kind of a radiation pattern that you may not like. Go ahead and experiment with it. Try it. There's a slim chance you'll like it, but in general, it doesn't have the orientation of your desired quarter wave or half wave antenna. So on the balcony, my strongest recommendation is make half wave radiators. Quarter wave, in general, I think are going to be a lot more troublesome. What if that makes some more sense, Paul? Wait for the beep, and because we're in the non-net mode tonight, they're making repairs on the repeater. K2LIW on the TechNet.
K2LIW, this is KB2LQN with a few questions. Wolf in Brooklyn.
We'll get to you in a second, Paul. Paul in Montcalm first, go ahead.
Daylight savings. Very good, Dick.
Okay.
Stick with the half at halfway, then on the balconies, 5/8 waves on the air conditioners. Understand RF ground, okay, and for that scenario, quarter wave, forget it, and of course they're generally good electrical grounds, Con Ed grounds, that's a good way of putting it. I hear the other station in there, Dick, and I'll stand by for the report from Griffin. See what happens on Halloween. Back to you, Dick.
Okay, Paul from Brooklyn, LQN. I think it's W2LQN. Go right ahead. My name is Dick.
Hi, Dick. I've spoken to you before. My name is Walt, Mike Walker, KB2LQN. I have this Cushcraft R6000 in my backyard, and right now it's currently on a PVC pole, and it's approximately 10 feet above ground. I was wondering whether that was the ideal condition for such an antenna, and what's your opinion about that?
Okay, I'm not as familiar as you'd like me to be with reference to commercial products. So the R6000, is that a recommended procedure? Is that a halfway radiator type? And is it recommended that it be mounted on a PVC pipe for a number of feet above ground? Is that the manufacturer's recommended installation, or did you make a change from his recommendation? Walt, back to you.
Yeah, this was put out by Cushcraft, and it says, when considering height above ground, achieve the line of sight in most desirable for optimal performance, and it is recommended that you achieve line of sight and be at least 10 feet above ground. And I have radios coming out. I figured that that would be the most optimum point for the radios. However, they don't specify PVC or steel, and right now I'm thinking about switching to galvanized steel for a better ground to the antenna itself. But meanwhile, it's being grounded through the radio to the house ground. I'm sure it'll be better if I put a galvanized steel pipe into the ground to make it maybe a better radiator.
On a quick break, Walt, how many ground plane radios do you have installed?
I believe it's 5 that are coming out of the antenna. Let me take a look at the book here.
Are all 5 the approximate same length, or are they on different lengths?
All the same length.
Okay. With 5 radials that are long enough for your lowest frequency, that is a very good ground plane radial system. Not perfect, but darn good. As such, RF-wise, that is the skeleton equivalent of a sheet of metal right at the base of your antenna. Those radials are doing that for you. Therefore, what you got below that, RF-wise, makes much less difference. If you use a piece of galvanized pipe instead of PVC pipe, I think you'd have a little bit more mechanical strength. You'd have a little bit more lightning protection grounding, and I think you'd have very little change in radiation characteristics. From what I'm hearing, your radiation characteristics are primarily determined by those 5 radials you've got, the ground plane radios you've got coming off from that antenna. I think you've got complete freedom to switch over to galvanized pipe if for mechanical and lightning grounding reasons you desire to do that. Back to you, Walt. Wait for the beam.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate that. But it does have a matching, unit there, matching network right at the base of the antenna, so that takes care of that problem. I'm getting pretty, I'd say the signal is pretty good getting out on 20 meters. The other bands, the lower bands, are not as great, not too much action on 6 through 17, but 20 meters I get out on, and I do have that MFJ SWR machine that checks out the SWR and the thing, and it looks like it's pretty good. But I just wanted to know what you felt about the galvanized pipe grounding the system out and whether it would affect the radiated signal. And thank you very much for your information. I appreciate that. KB2LQN, side and listening. Thanks again, Dick.
Very fine, Walt. What I gave you is an opinion, and I told you what the opinion is based on. As you can tell, I don't have hands-on experience with that antenna. And if you find out anything different and you run the experiment, please come back and let us all know what you find out. This is a great big learning experience for all of us, as you can tell. Mel, give us the next step on that Smith chart. K2KEY is going to tell us the basic understanding, basically how a Smith chart works. K2LIW listening.
Yeah, okay, well, see, that's basically, this is K2KEY emphasizes basically what I was alluding to about people with and the antennas and reading the FWR on any one of these units, the MFJ or the AEA or the antenna Smith, and looking at it only as SWR. There's so much more to it, and unless you really delve into some of the other readings that you can get and understand them, and even them, they can be ambiguous. I'm not going to go into experiments that I've done previously, even when these things were not even on the market, using other instruments. But even with the talks with the AEA engineer, I was able to find out, basically, he says, you know, this is not a kilobuck instrument. It's not a network vector analyzer in all these handheld units. So, you know, you got to take with a grain of salt, as they say, what you're reading. Let me let it drop.
W2VL, repeat it.
Okay, now if you have your Smith chart, that's basically what I explained to a number of people. I'd go over a little bit with the Smith chart and application, similar to basically just what we've been talking about. If you have the Smith chart in front of you, you'll notice that there's an axis going right through the middle. This is for people that don't get to use the Smith chart very often and don't really, you know, comprehend 100% how it really, what it really does. So again, if you have the Smith chart in front of you, you'll notice there's an axis goes right through the middle. We actually call that the axis of reels. That's basically what it's referred to. And you'll see that these lines, these circles going around inside there, crossing this axis, they are called the resistance circles. We refer to them as resistance circles. Now, you also see one spot in the middle of the chart where it says 1.0. That is known as the prime center, the prime center to 1.0, which we will be working with mostly. Now, outside the outer edges, these tangent lines, those will be our reactance circles or reactance tangents, actually, and we'll be working with that also. So, first of all, there's also, you'll notice from, if you go from the prime center, that 1.0 towards the right, you're going towards infinity, or what we call open circuit. If you go the other way, towards the left, towards the zero, that's what we call the short circuit. If you look above the zero, everything above the zero will be plus reactance, J, inductive reactance, and everything below that zero we'll be working with will be minus J, which would be capacitive reactance. Anybody have any questions so far? K2KEY. Okay, guess not. All right. Now, here's an experiment, basically, that I did. You can follow along, so it'll give you more or less of a pictorial of what's going on. I took the AEA handheld antenna analyzer. I put it onto a load, and the load read 3.0 to 1 SWR. Now, I took that, taking a compass now, and put the pin of the compass on 1.0, open the compass up so that the pencil of the compass will cross the 3.0 point and make a circle. Make a circle centering around 1.0 and the 3.0. So find the 3.0 towards the right of the 1.0. Just follow down the main axis and you'll come to it. And make a circle around that point. We'll call that circle A. Any questions so far? This is K2KEY. Okay, now we'll call that circle A. Now we know that our resistance, our true resistance and our reactance is somewhere on circle A. Alright, the next thing I did, I took a resistor, a 25 ohm resistor, carbon resistor. Now it could be, the resistor could be made of, could be a quarter watt, half watt, 1 watt, anything you got. It's a 25 ohm carbon resistor, and I put it in series with the line, the measurement point. Now, I didn't touch anything on the handheld analyzer, and I measured the SWR again, and I got now an SWR of 2.0 to 1. Taking a compass again, putting the pin on the center of the 1.0, open the compass to where you see 2.0, and make another circle. We'll call this circle B. Any questions so far? Okay, now, if we just, as I said, added that resistor. Now, what we're going to do, we took that resistor, which was 25 ohms, and we're going to divide it by the resistance of the feed line, which happens to be 50 ohms. So it's R over ZO, actually. That's 25, and we're dividing 50 into 25, so we get 0.5. Now I'm going to take that 0.5, and we're going to add it to the original circle A that we made, so that we come out at a point 3.5 on the axes of real, 5 yields 3.5, and we're going to put a little dot there. We're now going to go to the other side of this circle A, and we see it crosses the axes of real at 0.33 points. And we're going to add the 0.5 there also. So that's going to yield 0.83. Moving down the axes of reals, we're going to put a dot at that point, 0.83. Any questions so far? Okay. Now, if those 2 points, we put a dot at those 2 points at 0.83 and 3.5. We could bisect that line with our compass and find the center, but for demonstration, I'll tell you, if you put the pin of the compass on 1.6, you'll see that between those 2 points are 1.6 points, and draw another circle using that as our center and the 2 points that we made, 2 pencil points. As the radius for the circle, and we'll call that circle C. Any problems so far? Okay. Now you'll notice that circle C that we just drew crosses circle B at a point, at 2 points actually, a point above the axis and a point below the axis. Now, if we read that point, we go ahead and just read the point where it crosses the axis. You'll see that up on the top it crosses it at 1.05 following the resistance circle around. You'll see it a little bit between, a little bit off the 1. Just about estimating it. I did it mathematically, but I'll tell you it's 1.05. And if you look at the outer ring, that these curved tangents, and follow it down, you'll see 0.7, 0.7, and you'll see a little bit off that, so it's actually 0.72. So we call that point 1 plus, no, excuse me, we call that 1.05 plus J for the air reactant, 0.72. Any questions? Now, if we look down below the axes, we see that where it crosses, circle C crosses circle B, we got the same point, but it's 1.05 minus J0.72. Now, you'll notice that what we did when we put that resistor in, we got a lower SWR, indicating that we're going to be inductive. In other words, we're going to be working well with the 1.05 plus J0.72. Now, to transfer that, now we know we've got to transfer that back onto circle A. That's our original measurement where we know that I can, the resistance and the reactance lie. So all we have to do to transfer that back onto circle A, we're going to subtract that 0.5 from the 1.05 because we did add it, so now we're going to subtract it for the 1.05, and we're going to get 0.55, 0.55, and we're going to find that on our resistance circle. Follow it around, you'll see it, and we'll find 0.55, and at the same time, we're going to get the reactant stays constant at plus J072. That stays constant. We find those two points, and there lies our true resistance and our reactance. It'll be at 0.55, 0.55 plus J0.72. Any question?
W2VL repeater.
Okay, now the last thing we're going to do to what we call unnormalize gets us back to what we call resistance and reactance as we know it. We multiply by our impedance, which was a line, which was 50 ohms. We're going to multiply the 0.55 by that. That's going to give us 27.5 ohms resistive. And we're going to multiply the reactance, which was plus J0.72 by 50. And that's going to give us 36 ohms of reactance, of inductive reactance. Now, this way, when you make these measurements, remember, you're not changing the frequency of your handheld analyzer. Everything stays the same. You're just adding the resistance. This way, if you make any changes in your system, again, with the radials, this is where it came up with the vertical. What happens when you add the radials? What happens when you do anything? The idea is you've got to know what your resistance and your reactance is, and forget about going by the SWR. So basically, this is the layout, a simple way of using the Smith chart. From here, we can also determine other things you'll notice on the edge of the Smith chart, but I'll leave that for a little later. First, I'll shoot back to you, Dick. Any questions or comments about this? Over.
Yeah, what you guys are about to find out is there is a very large number of different ways of using a Smith chart. You can use it with drawing lines directly through the diagonal from the center in order to invert impedances, make impedances into the 1 over impedance, which is usually shown as the letter Y, which is admittance, and your reactance becomes acceptance. There's a billion ways you can use it. My main question, Mel, in your study so far of Smith chart and internet, I'll bet you you've already come up with at least one or two references, in other words, one or two URLs, addresses on the internet, where somebody does a pretty good job of showing you pictures and examples and instruction on using it. I'm a little bit afraid that some of the guys listening to you and I talk on this are going to be a little bit confused by it, because even if they get the Smith chart in front of them, they may not draw it quite the same way we do. And if they can refer to an article on the internet where they go to that particular address and it walks them through it, and before they're seeing it visually, at the same time they're reading the article and maybe duplicating it on this Smith chart in front of them, I think it's going to make a little bit more sense. So maybe you don't have one ready to go right now, but if you have a favorite website, I bet you there are people here who would love to hear about it. Thank you, Mel. K2KEY. K2KEY.